The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bjorkman, Judge Larkin, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Louise Dovery Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Thursday, January 19th. We are proceeding by Zoom this morning, and it's a good thing since it looks like a snow globe here in St. Paul today. In any event, we have four matters scheduled for oral argument. The first is the matter of Keystone Township versus Red Lake Water District. Council, I know you're both familiar with our proceedings. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. Mr. Von Korff, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and the timing is indicated in the tile that you should be able to see on your screen. It's important that you be mindful of the time, that you state your name and identify the parties you represent when you begin your argument, because we will be making an audio recording. In fact, that is the only recording that is permitted for today's proceeding. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm Gerald Von Korff, Rinky Noonan, representing the joint appellants, the drainage petitioners, and the Red Lake Watershed District. This is an appeal from a summary judgment dismissing improvement proceedings for lack of jurisdiction. Our main point this morning is to explain our position that the Red Lake Watershed District did acquire jurisdiction over the petition to improve County Ditch 39 under the Watershed Act, Section 103D625, Subdivision 4, which mandates that improvement petitions for existing drainage systems in the Watershed District must be initiated by a petition filed with the Watershed District Managers, not the county board. Simply stated, we contend that the court erred in concluding that the words in the watershed district doesn't mean within the geographic limits of the watershed district, but rather means under the jurisdiction of the watershed district.
Mr. Von Korff, I understand that's your argument. That's a reasonable way to read the statute. But I look at subdivision one of 103D.625, and it uses the language within the watershed district, which to me connotes a geographical boundary, but yet in subdivision four, dealing with new construction and improvements, it just uses the in the watershed district language. How do you square those two versions?
The legislative history of this statute is peppered with back and forth between in and within. The change from in within to in was put into the Watershed Act during a recodification. And that recodification contained in the recodification, I think we've cited in the brief, a determination that the wording changes in the statute shall not alter the meaning. So in and within are, by legislative act, intended to, to be the same. But there are a whole bunch of other indications. The Watershed Act has multiple indicators that watershed districts are empowered to accept petitions to improve drainage systems. In addition to 103D625, which was used here, section 103D701 and 705, which was used in a prior codification in the Lenz versus Coon Creek case we cited, authorizes initiation of a drainage improvement proceedings by filing a petition with the managers. Section 103D.201(9) in the list of watershed district purposes states that watershed districts are established to repair, improve, relocate, modify, consolidate, and abandon all part of drainage systems within the watershed district. So the Watershed Act has just always contemplated this power. The other point is that if you look at purpose of doing this. It all relates to the legislative preference to encourage comprehensive management of watersheds. And so the 103B 801, the One Watershed, One Plan, seeks to create a systemic watershed-wide scientist-based approach to water management. 103D 201 and 103A 212 make it water policy to manage from a watershed perspective. So the basis of requiring petition, to be submitted with the watershed district is the distinction between continued maintenance of a county ditch, which does not change the hydrology of the watershed. So the legislature has allowed watershed counties to continue to operate and maintain county ditches within the watershed.
But I agree with you. That seems to be, I don't know that we need to get to legislative history even if you seems to me a plain reading of 103D 625 in fact lets the county continue or turn over give control of an existing drainage system to a watershed district. I want to ask you, I guess, to comment on a different issue, and that is the argument of the respondent that even assuming that the watershed district had the authority to approve this petition, it didn't conform its proceedings to those required in Chapter 103E.
Yes.
How do you respond? And I think both sides recognize that the district court didn't decide on that basis because the court ruled that the watershed district had no authority to do what it did. But how do you square the proceedings here with the requirement that they conform to 103E?
So I think that's a two-part issue, at least, for the district court and this court. One part is whether the watershed district made the correct judgment in harmonizing the requirements of the 103D and 103E, and I want to answer that because it's an important question. And then the second part of that question, which I think is equally important, is whether when the watershed district makes that judgment, that is, it's trying to manage the project and with watershed officers and also trying to conform to 103E, whether when it makes that judgment, that is a jurisdictional question. So, and our view is it's simply not a jurisdictional question. And I'll, if I'm allowed to do that, I'll explain why, because I think that's really important.
Well, even if I were to agree with you that it wouldn't be a jurisdictional defect, 103 contains very specific timing and notice provisions, some of which simply were not met here, and I think that's undisputed.
I think there's one, I'm aware of one issue that during the pandemic, right in the middle, the governor issued his stay-at-home order, the schools were closed, I think they missed the, and they're required by 103E to get it done promptly, but also and they missed, I think, by 2 days off. And again, I think that that's simply not a jurisdictional requirement. what needs to happen under the district court's review powers is if somebody says, I was prejudiced by that, it didn't work for me, here's how I was prejudiced. Both appellate statutes, that is 103E.091, which is the appeal provision that appellants, respondents used here, and 103E.095, which they did not use, the establishment appeal, both of those statutes provide for de novo review. In other words, this is not the same appellate function that you have. The case comes up, the record comes up, but each party is allowed to provide additional evidence without limitation. And in the 091 appeal, which is the one that the drainage appellants used, it provides a de novo trial to the jury so that the appellant is getting new evidence, is getting to put in any evidence they want. They also get a de novo ruling from the judge to the jury. So,
right. But, and I understand what you're saying, but I mean, these are expensive. I think both parties said these are expensive proceedings. And the fact that people are not given proper notice or enough time to respond while the board is making its decision during that decision-making project has cost implications, doesn't it?
I don't believe that there's any evidence that the two-day period here had any cost implications. There was nothing presented to the court that said we were damaged. Certainly, if the court is presented with information that somebody was harmed, the district court has power to correct that. But the statutory description of what the court's powers are is that the court is to, in 095, to substitute an order that corrects the errors. And the petitioners here, that is the drainage petitioners, they are required to post a bond and agree in the petition to pay all of the costs of the entire proceeding if it's dismissed. So dismissal is the nuclear option. And of course, every appellant, drainage appeller, would really prefer that any issue be turned into a jurisdictional issue because they don't have to prove that the statutory requirements were met. And so the claim that this is jurisdictional is basically saying that if the drainage authority makes a mistake, the petitioner not only loses the case, but pays the whole cost of the proceedings. And if you look at 095, it's quite clear that the statute's saying, no, that's not the remedy for these problems. The remedy is a de novo review, a new decision. And if the court finds that it requires a remand to fix something, the court can remand. So just going back to the conforms to 103E, appellants have reason to think that the assignment of the jurisdiction to the district doesn't allow the district to use watershed officers watershed attorney and the secretary, and we just think that position is incorrect. The watershed has reasoned correctly, we think, that it follows from the assignment of the jurisdiction to the district that watershed officers, the managers, the secretary, and the watershed attorney should perform the functions assigned by Chapter 103E, but to do it the way that 103E, excuse me, requires. So for example, Section 103E.101 assigns the auditor's record-keeping functions to the secretary of the watershed district. So the filing, the record keeping, the bond in under 103E is the plain language would be, I guess I'm out of time, but the plain language is to issue the bond to the county, and that the statute can't possibly mean that.
Yes. Thank you, counsel. You will have a chance to return to that topic on rebuttal, should you wish to do so. Mr. Granger, we will now hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, opposing counsel. Opposing counsel discussed a lot about...
Just for our record, Mr. Granger, if you could identify the parties you represent. Thank you.
Thank you. I apologize. My name is Mark Granger. I represent the respondents in this case. It is an extensive list. I could read through them all if you would like, but it's the respondents in this case. Opposing counsel describes a lot of powers and things that are contemplated by the statutes and was contemplated by the legislature. But what's not addressed in those comments and that argument is when you've got a drainage authority other than a watershed district, how do those contemplative powers transfer from one authority to the other? And that's really at its core, that's what's at stake here. You have one drainage authority, it's undisputed, it's the county, and you have a watershed district. The ditch, up until that point, it's undisputed, is under the jurisdiction, control, and everything by the county. What this case is about is whether or not the proper procedures were followed such that the watershed district acquired that authority to do what it is attempting to do and do this improvement.
So that brings us to the language of subdivision 4 when we're dealing with an improvement to an existing drainage system. And the question of what does in the watershed district mean? I have to say that I'm persuaded by the appellant's suggestion that you need to read the whole, you know, section 625 together, and doing so compels a determination that in the watershed district means within the geographical boundaries. Why is that wrong?
Because it's not harmonized with the remaining code, either 103E or 103D. Everywhere throughout the code, there is a system, procedures, and so forth that establish how you hand off the baton, how you hand off jurisdiction and authority and control. And it bears noting that the authority and control that's included with that jurisdiction is powers of eminent domain, taxing authorities, and so forth. These are large, powerful powers, if you will. And everywhere else throughout the code, there is a process to involve the county in that process and at least give the county a say in handing that baton over.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's just assume a situation where, let's assume that Polk County under subdivision 1 had transferred, had the watershed district take over the drainage system within the watershed district. All right, so they had made that transfer under subdivision 1. Then assume that people have petitioned the watershed district to improve that drainage system. Are you suggesting that even when there's been that transfer, that because of the language in 103E, the watershed district would be compelled to involve the county attorney and the county auditor as part of the improvement petition proceedings.
Your Honor, that's what the statute says. And I think that it makes sense. There are certain functions by those county officials that it is their roles and that are consistent with their roles and responsibilities. For example, one of the duties of the county auditor is to maintain or exercise control and maintenance of tax records. And many of the petitions and many of the procedures throughout 103D and 103E require a review by the auditor of those records to ensure, for example, that 26% of the landowners within a certain drainage area sign the petition. The way that that is checked is by a search of the property tax records. That's a function that is carved out and makes sense for the county auditor to do.
But why can't a manager or a clerk for the managers or for the watershed district make that same record check?
Your Honor, if 103E or 103D said that, then that's what the legislature would have designated for that person to do. The question is that 103E delegates those specific duties to those specific people, even defines those specific people. And the question is that superfluous? Does it make sense? It does make sense because those are roles and functions that are identified and given to that specific role. And it's interesting that opposing counsel even raised an issue about the appeal process in this case. Now, it's somehow easy to get conflated when we talk about what appeals process. When the watershed district issued its order, the respondents in this case appealed to the district court. Now, part of that process is to file a copy of that notice of appeal with the county auditor. Now, there was some dispute over whether or not that service was effectuated, and that's what opposing counsel was referring to with the order of the governor and so forth. They're not disputing that it makes sense to serve the county auditor in that case, because that's what the statute says. So there are certain functions that are delegated specifically to that county auditor, and we can't just cherry pick as to say when it applies and when it doesn't. Taken under context of the whole, the auditor is involved in those things. By their own admission, they're involved in some of those things. For example, when you file a notice of appeal, you file it with the county auditor. They were making that argument before. Now, under their whole argument about if, in your scenario, Your Honor, if jurisdiction had already been transferred, it wouldn't make any sense under their argument to file that notice of appeal with the county auditor. But that's what the statute says, and it does make sense. It also makes sense to involve them in this case because there is that transfer of jurisdiction. Because there's that transfer of jurisdiction. I really have a hard time getting my head around the argument that you're going to strip and remove jurisdiction and authority and control from the county and give it to a watershed district, even though that's been contemplated, even though there may be a preference in the code to get that done, but to strip them and not even allow them the opportunity to object, contest it. Maybe they want to keep it. I have some scenarios that what if the county is responsible for maintenance of that ditch? What if they have plans to maintain it? What if they have other plans for that ditch because it's their ditch under their jurisdiction?
Then presumably they wouldn't transfer it, right? If the county didn't want to transfer it under subdivision one, they don't have to, do they?
That's kind of my point, Your Honor. Is that with why are improvements different? Why should improvements be different? Just because they file a petition for an improvement with the watershed districts, as the argument put forth by the opposing counsel, why in everywhere else does the county get the decision and sort of they can hang on to it if they want? But improvements, we're going to carve that out and say, nope, as soon as I file a petition with the watershed district, the county has no say in it. And they have no right to even notice. That doesn't conform, it doesn't jive, it doesn't harmonize with the remaining code. And that's what the lower court found as well.
You're saying that we can't read subdivision four in the way that appellants suggest, that in the watershed district means within the geographical boundaries of the watershed district. We can't read it that way because it would conflict with all of these other provisions of both the drainage and the watershed district acts.
Your Honor, I won't presume to say what the appellate court can and can't do. However, the code doesn't say that. And actually, when you read the manual that's put out, the Minnesota Public Drainage Manual, they actually define it. They point to 625 and they say that petitions under the in the jurisdiction, that's what the manual says. It says ditches in the jurisdiction of the watershed district may be filed with the watershed district. Now that doesn't alleviate them of the responsibility of also filing it with the auditor, because there are certain functions and duties that the auditor needs to do.
In terms of the manual, I think the appellant's argument is that one sentence in the manual reads as you read it, but then you follow up with that, you follow that up in other parts of the manual where it does make clear that, you know, new drainage systems or improvements, the petition is to the watershed district. At least that's the argument the appellants make.
I think that's a stretch, Your Honor, but it does go to the loosey-goosey sense of how we interpret the phrases. It's astonishing to me that there's the phrase in the jurisdiction should be clear. There's no ambiguity there in the manual. And yet here we are again with opposing counsel saying, oh no, that's a colloquial phrase that actually means within the geographical boundaries. Is the auditor the auditor, or isn't the auditor the auditor? Does it need to be filed with the opposing counsel? Again, also said that the bond it wouldn't make sense to have to file the bond with the county auditor. Of course it would. It's their ditch. It's their ditch up until that point. And I believe that I think it's unclear as to whether or not under opposing counsel's argument.
What about the situation where, let's pretend there wasn't a ditch 39, that this is a completely new ditch, right? And that your client or that the appellants, the petitioners brought their petition for a brand new drainage system to the watershed district based on subdivision 4. And subdivision 4, of course, applies to both new systems and improvements. But just reading it in terms of a new drainage system, if we adopt your analysis and there's no existing thing, how could it be under the jurisdiction of any entity at that point? If there is no drainage system at all, this would be a brand new thing. How would we read in the watershed district the way you urge us to read it?
Under that scenario, Your Honor, I believe that if all of the provisions were adhered to under 103E, if they truly did conform to 103E as the same code establishes, then upon completion, listen, the county would have had notice because things were still filed with the auditor. The auditor would still be required to notify the county. At the end, if all of those things were given and notice was given to the county and all of those procedures were followed under a brand new one and the watershed district accepted that jurisdiction, I think that you'd probably have to say that the watershed district would have jurisdiction under that. However, the difference there is that it's still county land. It's still county everything. And they should be they have constituents to answer to. It's not as though they have no say in it. And so even under those circumstances, it would still be proper to conform with 103E by giving that notice to the county and allow the county board to be given, because the county auditor then is required to notify the board. And so they would still have that opportunity to hang on to it or to at least raise an objection and work that way. But under this notion that the county doesn't have to be notified and that the county auditor has no roles at all, even though it includes a review of petitioners, whether or not they're landowners and whether or not petitions are proper by reviewing those documents, I can't get my head around, we're going to take away jurisdiction and we are going to give it to another entity just by the filing of a petition, and the county has no say, no involvement, nothing. I can't get my head around that. It just goes against all notions of notice requirements, proper jurisdiction, and the extraordinary powers that are given here. The lower district court, even, they did not decide the issue. I think you're correct. However, they did address it. The lower court did address it and said that strict compliance with the statutory requirements are necessary. It's in the last paragraph of the order. Strict compliance with the statutory procedures for commencing a drainage proceeding for improvement required the petition be filed with the county auditor. That doesn't change. And I would ask Your Honor, if I'm a small town attorney like I am, and I go into this code and I want to find out who do I file this petition with, the expectation is that I'm going to go through the legislative history and just finally make a determination that, oh, it says auditor. It says these things. It says that I must post a bond with the county. I must do all of these things. But wait, I'm going to go through the legislative history. I'm going to arrive at a different conclusion. If that's really the legislative intent here, it needs to be rewritten. That requires a legislative fix. With that, Your Honor, we would ask that this court respectfully request this court affirming lower court's decision. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Von Kort, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
To respond to the suggestion that the county does not get notice of these proceedings. In fact, the statute requires notification to other political subdivisions. The county gets notice and did get notice of the preliminary hearing. Two notices. The engineer got a notice because he's the highway department, and the county got notice because the statute requires it. It's in the affidavit of service. And the notice that comes to the county says, we're holding a preliminary hearing petition to determine the validity of the petition and the jurisdiction. And the county, of course, knows that because the county is also a drainage authority, and it well knows that the preliminary hearing is the point at which the drainage authority goes ahead with the project and starts spending a ton of money on engineering and viewing and all of that. And it knows because it does itself issue orders to show cause to all of the landowners, and here the county gets a notice to order to show cause, why an preliminary hearing order should not be issued, finding that the petition is proper. But it's not.
Even if we agree with you, Mr. Von Korp, I'm persuaded by Mr. Granger's argument that the legislature didn't intend this to be a trap for the unwary. How is a petitioner who is seeking to either construct a new drainage system or improve an existing system in a watershed district, how are they to know that there's to post a bond with somebody other than the county auditor or file notice with anybody other than the clerk or the county attorney?
Well, if they go to the county, as in this case, the county engineer told the petitioners, you need to go to the watershed district, because this is how it's done across the state, and it's certainly been done 17 times. So they find out that they have to go to the watershed district. The watershed district says you need to post a bond, and they post that bond. Now, the notice goes to the county that this is happening. The county attorney doesn't say, wait a minute, you're taking my jurisdiction. In fact, the engineer at the end of these proceedings communicates to the managers that they're super happy that the watershed district has overtaken this. The claim about the auditor having a function here, that comes from council's adoption of 103D211, which is gives the auditor a function in the cases where a watershed district is established. That section has absolutely nothing to do with establishment of, but as far as how does a person know if they want a petition, that of course not our problem here, they did petition to the right place. And in any county in the state, if a petitioner comes in and talks to the auditor, they're gonna tell them that there's an attorney general opinion. There's this is how you have to do it. And had the petitioners, our clients, gone into the auditor and filed the petition in the wrong place, and if the county had started to move forward with it, they'd be up here because the case could have been dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. So I just don't see the argument that the county doesn't know this is going on. That's unthinkable. And you see in the record the two organizations communicating. One engineer is talking to the engineer because they are also connecting to County Ditch 66 and imposing an assessment on. The county doesn't say, wait a minute, you can't charge our district an outlet charge because you don't have jurisdiction. They concede that there's jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Thank you both for your arguments. They were helpful, and we appreciate that. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.